Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a proprietary process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. A happy Labor Day weekend to you, wherever and whenever you may be listening to Talking.Golf this weekend. Rob Hernandez joined by Gary D'Amato. Gary, happy Labor Day weekend to you. It's bittersweet, my friend. It means it's nearing the end of summer, but it means we're into September and it's Ryder Cup month. Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks, Rob. Jim Kelch and I were riding around in a cart following the state senior amateur a couple days ago. And I'll tell you what, I had a polo on and shorts and I was cold. The cart, we had the Shark Experience GPS on our cart. And so it said the temperature was 70 degrees, but there was a cold wind. And Jim and I agreed there might have been a wind chill factor that day. So it's the first kind of really, the first day that I thought that it felt like fall was in the air. So, and fall certainly is going to be in the air in a few weeks. And so our golf balls flying at Whistling Straits. And boy, it's been a long buildup for this, Rob. And I can't wait.
Well, and that we're going to get right to the Ryder Cup report here to lead off Talking.Golf. And I kind of have a feeling that our Ryder Cup report is going to lead off a lot of Talking.Golf here in the month of September. But we start first with news that Captain Steve Stricker, first of all, earlier this week, named his final two captains for the Ryder Cup for the U.S. team, and they are Phil Mickelson and Fred Couples. They join Zach Johnson, Davis Love III, and Jim Furyk. When you saw the news that Phil Mickelson would be a captain or a vice captain, Gary, and not a player, what was your initial reaction?
Well, Rob, to be honest, it really didn't surprise me. As I wrote in my pick story that's up on our website now, had Stricker had to make his picks at the conclusion of the PGA Championship in May that Phil won. I think Phil would have been on the team. He would have been a pick. But as the weeks and months have piled up since then, and Phil really hasn't done anything, and then came out a few days ago or recently and admitted that, you know, he hadn't done enough to warrant a pick, then so it was no surprise that he became a captain or an assistant captain. And I think that's a great role for him. I think, you know, his veteran leadership and his charisma and everything is going to go a long way in the team room. He's going to help get the guys fired up, and he's going to be there to answer questions from the rookies who have never been there before. It didn't really surprise me, and I think it's a good move on Steve's part.
We also learned that Tiger Woods will not be a part of this Ryder Cup, at least in theory and in person, at least have no formal role. Steve Stricker has said throughout the week that he continues to have input and he continues to rely on Tiger. I guess, did that surprise you at all, that Tiger Woods wouldn't be physically able to get to Whistling Straits? And they say that you can only have five vice captains. Somebody joked that one day we'll have a vice captain for every player on the team.
Yeah.
But does that surprise you at all that Tiger would be a no-show for Whistling Straits?
Rob, I still think I have just a funny feeling that as the players come out on Friday morning to the first tee, suddenly from behind the ropes, Tiger is going to come out in a walking boot and on crutches, and the place is going to go absolutely crazy. And maybe it's a pipe dream on my part, but I just have a funny feeling something like that's going to happen. And can you imagine how fired up the players would be and how intimidated the Europeans would be to see Tiger waiting for them on that first tee on Friday morning? I'm probably wrong. Maybe it's a dream, but I just keep thinking something like that might happen.
Yeah, and again, the guy doesn't have to be a captain. He can fly in, fly out. He's got the means, right. Got the resources. The PGA, I'm sure, would make that happen if he were willing to do it. So we're going to cling to Gary's storyline and and hope that that is the case. So stay tuned on the Tiger Watch in terms of the Ryder Cup. Gary, you teased it. Your picks were in today. And your pick six, as we call it, the six guys that you think Captain Steve Stricker will choose to fill out the Ryder Cup team. Why don't you walk us through your six selections and why you think these six guys will be the ones to fill out the guys who made it on points and led by Colin Morikawa, the top point getter. And then the other five, Patrick Cantlay, Bryson DeChambeau, let's see here, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, and Justin Thomas. You had some great, some great thoughts as you tried to get inside the head of Steve Stricker. But what tell us who your six are and why you think they'll be the guys at Whistling Straits.
Well, you know, the guys who finished seventh, eighth, and ninth in the points, Rob, and that's Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, and Jordan Spieth. Everything I've read online and everything I've heard people talking, it seems to be a no-brainer that he's going to put those three guys on the team. And I have to agree with that. I can't imagine him leaving any of those three guys off the team. So, you know, all of a sudden we're down to three picks. And then it becomes really interesting because there's probably 10 to 12 guys who I think probably have been and are being considered for those three spots. And I picked Harris English because as the next pick, because he's a great putter. And Steve, you know, we heard him on the radio show on Dennis Tiziani and Paul Brown's radio show last week talking about how putting was going to be very important to him. So, Harris English is 10th in strokes gained putting on the PGA Tour, 9th in birdie average, makes a lot of birdies. So he would partner up in the team formats well with people. So that's why I picked him. Plus, you know, he's 10th in points and 11th in the world ranking. How could you pass up a guy who's that high in the world ranking and on the points? Then my next pick, Rob, Patrick Reed, that's probably the controversial one for a lot of reasons, but mostly because his health has been in question the last few weeks. He had the sprained ankle that forced him to miss two tournaments, and then he's coming back apparently from COVID, had the double pneumonia, had pneumonia in both lungs and was hospitalized. He's playing this week in the Tour Championship. He didn't get off to a good start, shot a couple over in the first round, but he played a little better today and shot 69. I just think he checks all the boxes that you're looking for if he's healthy, and that is his Ryder Cup record. He's 3-0 in singles. He's a great putter, and he brings a passion to the matches, Rob, that will fire up the American, you know, the partisan crowds. So that's why I picked him. And then my last pick was probably kind of a safe pick in a way. Webb Simpson finished 13th in Ryder Cup points, so Steve wouldn't be reaching too far down the points list and get criticized for that. He's ranked 20th in the world. He's made a great comeback, has a lot of Ryder Cup experience, and he has that veteran leadership, having played on a lot of teams that, you know, Stricker covets. Davis Love talked about how they needed, because the team was young, they needed veteran leadership on it, and here's a guy who checks that box. So, you know, I might be wrong on one or two of those picks, but that's kind of the way I'm leaning, Rob. And now we're going to go to you and find out who you would pick for the six.
Well, first of all, we should say that 7, 8, and 9, I would agree with what Steve had to say the other night and what other people are saying about the fact that, you know, it's a no-brainer. Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, and Jordan Spieth have been exceptional this calendar year on the golf course and really bring a lot to the table. Xander Schauffele, I believe, would be a Ryder Cup rookie, but Finau's got one Ryder Cup under his belt, and Jordan Spieth has played well in two or three. So, and he pairs well with Justin Thomas, which I think is gonna, I'll get to, you know, how I made my selections in a minute, because Jordan Spieth fits into that. What I did, Gary, and I like the way you wrote your column, because you really went at it the way Steve Stricker is going at it in terms of diving into all the analytics. So what I did was I tried to move past the analytics, and I tried to go to Thursday's I'm sorry, Friday's four ball and foursomes matches, and kind of get a, you know, just a sense as to, you know, what, who might be paired with who, and why, and try to go through some hypothetical pairings, you know, based on the two formats. And again, foursomes matches, as I understand them, Gary, because we tend to forget what the format is until it rolls around every other year, kind of like you forget about maybe gymnastics or ice skating and or figure skating in the Olympics until we get to, you know, we're captivated by it every 4 years. So in the foursomes matches, alternate shot, you know, you need a combination of guys who can hit it far. And I'm sorry, yeah, so the foursomes, hit it far and putt well. And I love your Harris English pick, and I love the fact that he's become kind of a popular guy. And I felt like in today's, here on Friday, as we record Talking.Golf, we got a glimpse into, you know, maybe what might be a pairing at the Ryder Cup when Harris English was paired with Bryson DeChambeau. And I, again, I said it on a tweet earlier this after the playoff that Bryson was in last week, Patrick Cantlay, that, you know, if Steve Stricker doesn't send Bryson DeChambeau off first in each of the sessions, I think he's losing an opportunity to really fire up the what should be an overwhelming home crowd. And so I've got Harris English and Bryson DeChambeau going off first on Friday, you know, where you've got a good all-around player in Harris English, and then you've got a bomber in Bryson DeChambeau. And then, you know, I kind of feel like most of the guys who made it on points need to, you know, play in that first session and show us why they're the hottest golfers in the world. And so, you know, kind of, you know, I've got Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth anchoring the first session, and then I've got Dustin Johnson and Colin Morikawa going off second. The one where, you know, you got to find a way to get, you know, these back to, you know, these at-large picks into the rotation on day one. And I feel that Tony Finau and Brooks Koepka, you know, I think they formed a team over in France when Finau played 2 years ago or 3 years ago now. And so I try to be safe in pairing people up and therefore safe in my selections that way. Now that's where I go off the reservation. I'm in your camp. I don't know what to think of 10 and 11. I'm sorry, 11 and 12. I'm of the belief that Patrick Reed should not be on the team. Again, we're sitting here 3 weeks out, and this is the dilemma Steve Stricker is going to have. We're 3 weeks out, and we don't know how much of a recovery Patrick Reed can make from, you know, whatever it was, COVID, double pneumonia. I mean, he was laid up, and he talked about it in his news conference yesterday after his round that, you know, he had doctors telling him he might want to text his family during the, you know, during his stay in the hospital. It was that serious. And 72-69, he's 26 out of, you know, out of 30 on the leaderboard. And it doesn't bode well for the fact that he's in Ryder Cup shape. So I left him off my team. And so after Harris English, I'm going Kevin Na and Scottie Scheffler. And Kevin Na's a wild pick, but, you know, what little, you know, I look for a guy who, you know, might be a crowd favorite and, you know, a guy who walks in his putts in a Ryder Cup, I think would be a no brainer. And the guy is, you know, one of the best putters, especially in shots gained putting on the PGA Tour. And so I threw him out there. The hard part is who are you going to pair with Bryson DeChambeau after Harris English? And you need Bryson out on, you know, on the course almost every session if he can handle it. I think he's built himself for this. So I say Kevin Na and pair him with Bryson in four ball on Friday afternoon and see if Kevin Na can, embrace the bright lights. And then the other guy that I chose was Scottie Scheffler. And Scottie Scheffler's record in major championships this year is second to few. I mean, he's been top 10 in most of the majors and has had, just a really good 2021. And so, you know, I took two Ryder Cup rookies in Shoffley and Cantlay and put them together in one of the four ball matches to get them you know, and again, you know, there's two different schools of thought for Captain Stricker. Do you put one of them with a guy who's played in the Ryder Cup before just to be safe? Or do you let those guys just kind of go off? And if you don't get the point, you don't get the point. I mean, it's been a long time since the U.S. has run the table on opening day, so I don't think you have anything to lose. Then I say you send Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth back out there until they show that they're not a good team. And then the last match for the U.S. side on Friday would be Dustin Johnson and Scottie Scheffler. I just think DJ can carry a pairing no matter who he's with. He's playing that well and has played that well all year. There aren't the injury issues there are with Brooks Koepka. I don't know if you really want to throw Koepka out there every single session and hope that he's sharp comes Sunday afternoon when, you know, he's going to have to draw somebody pretty good, maybe a John Rahm in singles competition. So I think you've got to keep him mentally and physically sharp. So I differ in the last two. Instead of Patrick Reed and Webb Simpson, I go Kevin Na and Scottie Scheffler. But you know, I do think that the top of this U.S. lineup, Gary, is so good that compared to the Europeans, I don't think we need to spend a lot of nervous energy about numbers 11 and 12 because they may only get three cracks at the Ryder Cup this year because those top eight or nine guys are just so, so good.
Yeah, you're right, Robin. Your reasoning and your picks, certainly you presented strong arguments for both of those guys. I can't argue with your reasoning for picking them. You know, a couple other guys we should mention that a lot of people are talking about, and we have the contest going on our Facebook page,
yeah,
our Wisconsin.gov Facebook page. A lot of people are mentioning Daniel Berger, and I'm sure he's been, you know, he's definitely one of the guys Stricker is looking hard at, I would think. You know, he played on that victorious 2017 President's Cup team that Stricker captained. But the one thing is, you know, Steve talked about how he needed guys who played Whistling Straits well and played big golf courses well. And Daniel missed the cut at the 2015 PGA at the Straits, and he tied for 75th earlier this year at Kiawah Island. So he doesn't check that box of a guy who has, at least on those two big courses, has played well. And then my surprise pick, if there's going to be one out of left field, it might be Jason Kokrak. Rob, he's playing well in the Tour Championship. He ranks fourth on the tour in strokes gained putting and 21st in driving distance. I mean, my goodness, those are the two keys that Stricker has stressed over and over, and that you need putting in the Ryder Cup, you need driving distance at Whistling Straits. So I wouldn't shock me if Kokrak was one of the picks.
I agree, and I saw that name too, and you know, he's obviously, he's just a solid guy through and through. And a guy who I believe played his college golf at Xavier of Ohio, and so he's used to the upper Midwest in late September, and I think that is a factor, and it might be something that Steve Stricker is considering as he makes that pick. Another guy right below him on the standings, the final U.S. Ryder Cup point standings, is Sam Burns, who's gotten a lot of airtime over the last month, even before the playoffs, but certainly in the playoffs. And, you know, not just for his cheesy little mustache he's got going, but, you know, he's a guy that again, you know, is one that you some people think might be, you know, a guy who is impervious to the pressure and just doesn't care about the Ryder Cup pressure because he continues to, you know, throw his name on leaderboards in big, you know, tournaments and here in the playoffs. So that's another one. You know, a lot of people love Kevin Kisner, but boy, his record is just awful in the majors. And, you know, outside of what he did, you know, he's done in team competition and in match play, it's great. But, you know, I just think it's too much of a wild card. And I thought, you know, and he's right ahead of Kevin Na. So I acknowledge the fact that, you know, I'm a guy who's going, you know, coming out of left field with Na. And Na is very much, you know, tunnel down the, you know, is strictly based on putting and strictly based on his opportunity to help out, you know, in the foursomes matches. I don't think you necessarily put him out there for, you know, four ball. You have to on Thursday, because I don't think you put out, you know, too many rookies in that first session. You need to get your, you know, momentum early if you're going to try to reclaim the cup. And I think that's going to be Stricker's, MO as well in filling out the lineup card for Friday. But you know, I don't know if Kevin Kisner checks enough boxes, you know, to get to Whistling Straits and certainly the boxes that, you know, that you analyzed. You know, there's only one or two that really play into his wheelhouse.
Yeah, I agree, Rob. Yeah, I really like Kevin Kisner as a competitor, and so does Steve. I know Steve. I happen to know Steve loves the guy, and he's got that great match play record at the WGC match play. He was undefeated. Well, he had a couple halves at the President's Cup, but he didn't lose a match in 2017. And Stricker loves the guy, but I agree with you. You know, he's a bunter. He does not hit the ball very far, and he missed the cut at the straights in 15, and he shots a pair of 77s at Kiawah Island earlier this year. So as much as Steve would want to pick him, I don't think he can afford to pick him.
Gary, the point that Davis Love made last week at the Ally Challenge about the lack of experience, he's really the only one I've heard articulate that. I'm not sure that we're going to see Captain Stricker do anything nuts in terms of trying to get experience on the team. You know, I floated out Stuart Sink's name. Stuart had a good round today, was kind of in that same ballpark as Patrick Reed, 72 yesterday, came back with a 68 today. But unless he goes 65-65 in the final 2 days, I just think that, you know, Stuart Sink is maybe my first, as they would say in the NCAA tournament, my first out. I just think he would be, you can't go too far to go, you know, down the list to get him in there. And then the only other guy who as I look back at the last couple of Ryder Cups that really jumped off the page, and it was more because he's a good partner than he is a good player, and that's Matt Kuchar, who teamed with Dustin Johnson at Hazeltine, and especially in that morning foursome session. They destroyed Lee Westwood and Thomas Peters 5-4, and overall we're a pretty good team. And then Kuchar, you know, paired with Mickelson in four ball, and they beat Keimer and Garcia that year as well. He's a guy who's a gamer, but he has had an awful year, so I don't think you can go there. I'd take Sink over Kuchar, and I probably would have taken Mickelson over both of them.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment, Rob. In my opinion, and maybe I'm way off base on this, but I think, you know, that veteran leadership is a little bit overrated. I think if you get a rookie like Scottie Scheffler or a couple of the other guys we talked about, Sam Burns, these guys, you know, I don't think they're going to – I don't think a Scottie Scheffler is going to be intimidated on the first tee on Friday morning. And you get that youthful enthusiasm and the joy of being there. Not that the older guys don't have it, but it's a little bit different after you've played in three or four Ryder Cups compared to your first one. And I don't see anything wrong if should Steve decide to go that way and load up on rookies. You know, if they lose, he's going to get criticized, but if they win, he's going to be a genius. You know, so I agree with you on that.
Well, and if they do well, he's going to be a genius for the next couple of Ryder Cup captains, and he's going to be the guy that led the youth movement, and I think it sets him up real well, I think to your point on this whole youth thing, I mean, we've been writing for the last decade about how these young guys coming out of college in the junior ranks, you know, they grew up in the Tiger era, they don't know what it's like to watch an idol, cave to pressure. I mean, there are no chokers in this generation because they haven't grown up watching them. I mean, and again, it's harsh to say, but, we haven't had a Vanderveld or a Greg Norman or a Scott Hoke or, some of the major meltdowns that golf has experienced, back in the 80s and 90s. I mean, since Tiger, we've had a few putts missed here and there. But I mean, it isn't anybody that's to me that is put these kids in the mindset that you try not to lose golf tournaments instead of win them. They go out to win golf tournaments, and I just think that probably, to your point, makes the experience factor a little bit moot. And maybe the last thing we should look at too, Gary, is the fact that who are we up against here? The four guys that that Europeans going to trot out based on European points, it looks like right now, are John Rahm, Tommy Fleetwood, Tyrrell Hatton, and Rory McIlroy. And Rahm's been great. Fleetwood, is hot and cold this season. And Rory McIlroy has been the absolute, Jekyll and Hyde. I honestly don't know much about Tyrrell Hatton's record this year, but, the fact that he's got, third in European Tour points tells me that he's had a pretty solid year. And then we go to the world points, and then you're looking at Victor Hovland, who's played most of his golf on the PGA Tour and is in the hunt this week at Eastlake. Paul Casey, who's up there in years, along with Lee Westwood and Shane Lowry. And then the other guy's Matt Fitzpatrick. And Fitzpatrick probably fits the mold of the guys that we're talking about at 11 and 12 on the U.S. side, where he's not what you would call a grizzled Ryder Cup veteran. And then it's up to, Patrick Harrington. I think he's got three picks. And then, you know, that's where you might go to a Sergio Garcia, who's played well down the stretch. Ian Poulter he's kind of in the same boat Phil Mickelson. He hasn't had a great year, but he's a Ryder Cup killer. You know, I mean, so I I'm not sure that, you know, we have to worry too much about the depth on this U.S. team, because the top of it is clearly, in my opinion, superior to what the top of the European team is going to be.
Yeah, and the other point about the veteran leadership and the veteran and the Ryder Cup experience on the U.S. side is those guys have a lot of scar tissue. They have watched Ian Poulter and Sergio Garcia and Thomas Peters and Rory McIlroy pour in putt after putt after putt and hoist that Ryder Cup. It seems like every other year, although the Americans have won one of the last five, I believe. But yeah, so those guys who are veterans, they're veterans at losing this thing. They're veterans at getting beat. So do you really need those guys on the team? You know, that's another point to consider.
Yeah, and I think that was my knock against Webb Simpson, was that I want to say that he was one of the guys in the mix that has played in the Ryder Cup before, but he's like 0-3, and he missed out on Hazeltine, and you know where they won, and so yeah. It's you know again, so in that respect, you know, cynical me says, okay, you make the team on points and start winning, you know, be on a winning Ryder Cup team before I'm going to name you to a Cup team, and I'll get, you know, at this point I'll float that spot to somebody else. The last one I'll throw out there, Keegan Bradley played well down the stretch, but again, too little too late in my opinion. Bubba Watson, same deal. You know, there's a lot of guys. It's amazing how much, and maybe that speaks well for the youth movement on the U.S. side, Gary, is that, you know, how many other guys played their way into the mix, played their way to get, you know, into getting Stricker's attention and move some of the veterans down the ranks to the point where it becomes a flyer if you take a chance on somebody that's got any more than three Ryder Cup appearances in them, because they're so far removed from the game.
Well, there's you're right. There's going to be quite a bit of turnover on this team compared to the team in 2018, which is 3 years ago. You expect some turnover, but when you have two of your top six being Ryder Cup rookies and the other four, you know, don't have a ton of experience other than maybe Dustin Johnson. So, it's going to be possibly one of the younger, as far as experienced teams that we've fielded for in some time.
And we know now that Captain Stricker will make his selections on Wednesday morning at a 9 a.m. news conference. That was made official today. And it'll be interesting. You've known Steve for a long time, Gary. How do you think he's going to handle this 11th hour of the process of selecting a team? I would think this has got to be the hardest point in the process for him, because he's got to tell some people no.
Yeah, that's always the hardest part for the captain, is those guys who are right on the bubble, who probably feel like they deserve to be on the team and won't be. You have to tell those guys, you have to make that phone call and say, I'm sorry, but you just, you know, it's not that you didn't do enough. It's that I thought someone was better for this reason. And so that's going to be a hard thing for Steve, but, you know, I'm sure, knowing Steve, I think he's a consensus builder. I think he's probably behind the scenes talking to a lot of people, past Ryder Cup captains. He talked about how he spoke with Paul Azinger at length recently. I'm sure he's running everything by his five assistant captains. I'm sure he's getting good input from them, and talking to the six automatic qualifiers and getting their input on who they see being on the team and who they want to play with. So I don't think it's Steve, by himself in a room saying, I want this guy, and this guy. I think he's going to have a lot of information, and he's going to make his pick based on what a lot of people are telling him.
I would like to have been a fly on the wall at the dinner that Steve had this week with the six guys in Atlanta.
Yeah.
To know what was talked about. Because if I'm formulating that agenda, there's a lot, there have been a lot to unpack there with the Brooks and Bryson issue, and in terms of trying to unify, you know, so much was written this week about, you know, the tour taking steps to kind of protect Bryson DeChambeau from the Brooksy chance. And, you know, again, it's there's a lot that can divide this team. I like Stricker as a unifier.
Yeah, I think he's going to be that. And I think, you know, as far as the Bryson thing and the people yelling Brooksy, for once, he's not going to hear that from he better not anyway, from the U.S. fans. If the U.S. fans are pulling for this team to win, which they should be, I don't think he's going to hear that. He might hear it from some Euros, Rob, from some partisan European fans in the crowd. But if that's the case, I think, you know, the team is going to rally around him and the American fans are going to shout down the Euros who are doing that. So I don't think that's going to be a factor in the Ryder Cup as it has been, if we've seen on a week-to-week basis on the tour.
It took Phil and Tiger almost a lifetime to get over whatever differences they had. And now they seem to be very good friends and they're doing a lot together for the game, as did Jack and Arnie. We've talked about that before on Talking.Golf. What would your percentage be of the fact that Steve Stricker would take that move and all of a sudden, you know, you talk about your perfect scenario of Tiger Woods walking out on the first tee to welcome the guys to Whistling Straits as like your Walmart greeter. I think Steve Stricker on day two, sending Brooks and Bryson out together would be the ultimate of shockers for the Ryder Cup.
It would be such a bold move. I mean, it could reap enormous dividends and it could blow up. And it Steve, I don't know if he's that big a risk taker. But you know what? If Brooks and Bryson go to him and say, you know what, we're going to put this to rest, play us together. We've got an 8-2 lead after day one. Send us out together and we'll fire up the crowd and we'll win our match. I mean, I could see something like that happening. I don't think they'll play together on the first day, but if the U.S. gets a big lead, can you imagine Bryson and Brooks walking out on the first tee together on Saturday morning? Oh, man, goosebumps.
Can you imagine the crowd on that hole and every hole after that? That would be something else.
Yep.
Well, that is the Ryder Cup Report here on Talking.Golf, the Ryder Cup Report powered by Kohler Golf. And, of course, Talking.Golf sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Their technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. And so go to ironjack.com for more, and maybe even for a pronunciation on antimicrobial. I finally got around to listening. Brian Butch does this read for a show he does on the radio, and he nailed it. I spent the whole week trying to research. I was pronouncing it wrong all these weeks that Iron Jock has been our great sponsor. But it's antimicrobial is the pronunciation of this protection that eliminates all this darn, you know, this smell that you emit when you wear a cotton t-shirt out golfing.
And we have seen that on Muni golf courses. Definitely.
Absolutely.
A lot of t-shirts.
Absolutely. All right, time for What's Up, powered by your Instagram page at wis.golf. Megan Augustine continuing to get all the great stuff out there. The thing that's fascinating about Instagram, Gary D'Amato, is how it unites generations of golfers. When you and Jim Kelce were out covering the senior amateur this week and Bob Gregorski's win, and she put the picture up of the two, basically the champion and the runner-up in the playoff, shaking hands. It got a lot of likes from not just guys in the senior ranks, but a lot of the junior golfers who we have on our Instagram pages. And I think that's pretty cool because you were at that senior AM and it was a pretty poignant playoff, pretty poignant, final day. And it was hard to, cheer for the winner because the runner up had a great story too.
Yeah, it was a good match. It wasn't a match. It was a tournament, but it came down to a match, basically match play over the last five or six holes because those guys that separated themselves, we're talking about Bruce Henning and Bob Gregorski by, three shots basically from the field. So they both played really well down the stretch until Bruce Henning, had a little problem on 18, didn't hit a very good drive, couldn't go for the green in two. It's a par five. Bob Gregorski did go for the green in two, and although he missed it long, he made the birdie, and then Bruce three-putted from the fringe from maybe 25 feet to create the tie. They went into the playoff, but yeah, Rob, it was one of those occasions where the winner, Bob Gregorski, who had great empathy for Bruce, and there was not this wild celebration or hands up in the air or anything like that. Bob just took off his hat and shook Bruce's hand because he knew how hard it was on Bruce not.
Three qualifiers moving on to the first stage out of Prattville, Alabama. Unfortunately, the news not as good in Bermuda Run, North Carolina, Bermuda Run Country Club. Kaylor Steger, who's had himself a nice year, he kind of went in the other direction than Taylor Kozer. Started out 72, finished 74-75, the pre-qualifying stage, only 54 holes. He finishes T36, 35 golfers go on, so he misses by one. He had a quadruple bogey on his second nine today, and but finished with a birdie on 18, it looks like, according to the live scoring, and misses by one. The heartbreak qualifying for the Korn Ferry Tour and trying to get status on a PGA Tour sanction tour front and center today for Kaylor Steger, who's really had himself a great year on the Dakotas Tour and in virtually everything he played, and he will miss by one. And then out in La Quinta, California, another miss, Zach Gaugert out of Wanakee. Just a rough week all the way around for Zach. 74, 79, 75. He finishes T66 at 12 over 228. And out in the desert, it took a score of one over or better to move on to the first stage. Gary D'Amato, the Korn Ferry Tour qualifying continuing to be a rigorous thing for these guys. And this is just the qualifying to get into the first stage.
Yeah, pre-qualifying to get into the qualifier, to get into the first stage and try to qualify. And then there's stages after that, Rob. It's, as we've talked about so many times, it's so hard to get to that level. It's actually, I think, sometimes easier to stay on a Korn Ferry Tour or to stay on a PGA Tour than it is to get there. And we're seeing that. We've seen that over the years with so many guys who have, we thought had the talent to make it and just came up short for one reason or another. It's good to see that one or two of those guys have gotten through and can continue to follow their dream.
And, Zach Gaugert, Kaylor Steger haven't gone through the process nearly as much as Taylor Kozer, who's just a little bit older than those guys. So we'll see how long, each of these guys, this is the time of year where when you get to the end of your Korn Ferry Tour qualifying school stage, you sit there and ask yourself, am I going to do it again? And, is it worth the time and the effort? And again, it only takes 1 week out here on the PGA Tour and the satellite tours. And that's what these guys are facing with those decisions. And of course, we'll be talking more about it here as we hit first stage here in a few weeks and with more guys from Wisconsin trying to qualify as well as now Taylor Kozer on to that next stage. Gary, one other thing to get to from this past week, the Mike Schnarr Boys Golf Championship was held, the inaugural at Blackhawk Country Club. I had a chance to talk to Mike, 82 years old now, and the former head pro at Blackhawk Country Club. But the reason we talked to him was because he helped start what is now the WPGA Junior Tour. And I had to go back in my archives at the State Journal to remember what I even wrote back when that started. And it barely got a mention, just that they were going to have a couple of events. And now, they've got, between the Junior Tour, the Futures Tour, the Players Tour, and the Regional Tours in Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, well over 100 tournaments for juniors to play in the summertime. We've talked about this before, far different than when we grew up. And, credit to Mike Schnarr, who didn't really take credit for starting the Junior Tour, but took credit for being the president when he and guys like Jim Thompson and Carl Yunus and Dennis Tiziani and just a lot of the stalwarts, Steve Howe, saw, the merit in starting and getting some opportunities for junior golfers.
Yeah, that's so cool, Rob. I thinking back to when I was a senior in high school back in the Stone Age, when I was a senior, it was the first year of the Ben Cresciuto Junior Masters down in Racine. And besides that, you could play in the state junior boys. And then, if I remember correctly, all the Milwaukee County courses had their own junior tournament. So I remember playing in the Grant Park Junior Tournament a couple of times. But other than that, that's all we had. And now the we've talked about it many times on this podcast, and you've covered it extensively for our website. These young men and ladies have tons and tons of opportunities, and that's why that's one of the reasons we've seen so many good young golfers coming out of Wisconsin in recent years.
Well, and a lot's changed how college coaches recruit the junior level. It used to be that the high school, you know, results were enough to go on, and that's no longer the case. And so, you know, again, credit to what Andy Landenberger now at the WPGA and really the entire section is doing in terms of getting behind junior golf. So, it was great that Mike Schnarr, who, again, you know, helped get that going, is now being recognized by his son, Derek, by having a tournament at Black Hawk Country Club, where both of them have spent, you know, pretty much their entire lives giving back to the game of golf. And now it looks to be the final event each year for boys on the summer golf schedule, because that was Monday and Tuesday. And then, of course, Wednesday, school starting throughout Wisconsin. So just like that, the summer golf season sunsets for the junior ranks. But golf at Black Hawk Country Club, very much alive and well. And as we go to our What's Next segment here on Talking.Golf, and What's Next, sponsored by our Twitter account at wis.golflive. That's where all the results go once they're posted to our website. And we'll have results Monday and Tuesday of next week from the Wisconsin State Senior Open. And Gary, you talk about the evolution of golf in Wisconsin. We're seeing it with this State Senior Open. Among the 50 and older golfers that'll be in the field, Mario Tiziani, Derek Schnarr, who will have his dad, Mike, caddying for him, and Tim Cantwell Jr., who won the Wisconsin State Amateur at Blackhawk back in 93. All of a sudden, the Wisconsin State Senior Open, to me, is looking like a regular state open, because these are names that, you know, you and I, quote unquote, grew up covering.
Rob, it's hard to believe this much time has passed. You know, that 93, when Tim Cantwell Jr. won the his state amateur title at Blackhawk, that was, I believe, the second state amateur I covered for the Milwaukee Journal back then. We didn't, the papers hadn't even merged yet. We both go back a long time in the state, Rob, and it's cool to see those guys now playing as seniors. Makes me feel a little old, though, I have to admit.
So it should be a fun 2 days of competition on a golf course that I think is perfectly suited for the State Senior Open. And of course, a lot of the stalwarts, Jim Schumann will be in the field, and Jim Dewing, who came off of a great showing over at the U.S. Senior Amateur in Detroit, had to miss the Wisconsin State Senior Amateur to do it, but he got into match play and had the defending champion from 2019. Of course, the Senior Am not held last year at the U.S. level, and had him two down near the end of the front nine. And then the defending champ from Pennsylvania flipped the script and was able to pull out a 3-1 win over Jim. But Jim was nice enough, and I'll send those along to you, Gary, and we'll have something maybe in sweet spot on Monday. But Jim texted me all these great pictures of you know, Arnold Palmer won a U.S. amateur at the Country Club of Detroit, and they have turned that place into a shrine for Arnold Palmer. They had his bag on the range the first day, and then they also had the trophy, a replica of the trophy, over a commemorative locker for Arnie in the locker room, which I think is just great. History, when it's celebrated like that, is just really cool.
Yeah, Rob, between Arnold and Jack, I think there's probably 50 mini museums around the country, you know, at different golf courses where they won championships and major titles. And I remember playing in Branson, Missouri a few years ago. And the owner, Johnny Morris, the guy who's built that whole golf empire down there, had Arnold Palmer's, I guess you call it his work shed or his garage, taken apart board by board and flown to Branson and reassembled. And so and now it's a little restaurant you eat in, but that's where Arnold did all his, he had all his clubs and his equipment, and where he fiddled around and re-gripped clubs and all that kind of stuff. And they have his barn intact now in Branson, Missouri. So, yeah, it's cool to see history honored like that.
And last but not least, it is college golf getting underway this weekend. Harrison Ott, the newly minted state open champion, two times over, successfully defending his title last month at Black Wolf Running Kohler. He and the Vanderbilt men's golf team getting underway out in Pebble Beach. Gary Harrison's playing number one for the Commodores here to start things out on the shores of the Pacific at one of the famous, most famous golf courses in the country, the Pebble Beach Golf Links. They open up with a 361, which seems like an odd score for a highly ranked golf team like Vanderbilt, but they're playing six and counting five this week. And Harrison Ott with a 200 par 70. He went out in 32, came in 38, finished par in those famous final three holes at Pebble Beach to shoot 70, and he's currently tied for ninth. We talked to him about it. You know, he got bumped out of the lineup last spring, used it as motivation, had himself a great summer and great showing at the U.S. Amateur, and then came back and defended at the State Open. And he qualified number one on a great Vanderbilt golf program. That kind of says a lot about Harrison Ott.
It sure does, Rob. He had a terrific summer, capped by winning the State Open for a second time, second straight year. And it's kind of amazing that he couldn't crack the lineup, you know, for NCAA regionals last year in the NCAA tournament. Or he did play in regionals, right?
Yep.
But then not the championship. Right. And now he's number one. That just goes to show you what this summer has done for him and his confidence and his game.
And then the big one here locally starts Sunday, the Marquette Intercollegiate at Erin Hills. They just, as we started recording the podcast, I've been watching for this all day, they just posted the teams that will be in the field for the Marquette Intercollegiate. And it's going to be another great field assembled at Erin Hills. Not only the host of Marquette Golden Eagles, but Iowa, Minnesota, which let's click on here and – No, let's see here. Marquette, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and I just lost my spot there. Okay, Liberty, Southern Cal, UC Davis, Houston, The Ohio State University, Northern Illinois, South Florida, Kansas, and East Tennessee State are in the field, and the Marquette Golden Eagles only have four listed. In their lineup so far for that first spot, which tells me we're still having a little bit of a playoff for that last spot. But right now, Hunter Eichhorn at number one, Max Lyons at number two, who I believe is one of the new freshmen that have come in highly ranked, highly regarded. Tyler Leach, number three, and Nicholas Evangelio, number four. So Steve Bailey with a lot of depth in the lineup this year. And then for the Badgers of Wisconsin, interesting here, playing number one will be Coulter Smith, Cameron Huss, number two, Griffin Barilla, number three, Robbie Morway out of Mequon, number four, and Graham Moody, freshman out of Seattle or out of the Vancouver area in up Washington, is going to play number five as Mike Wilson will make his coaching debut for the Badgers there. What do you make of what I just read off there in those lineups, Gary, for the two in-state D1 schools?
Where did you find that, Rob? I'm looking at GolfStat right now, and I don't see it in GolfStat.
If you go to the main page and click Marquette's tournament is there on that main GolfStat.com, yeah. Bottom right, click on Marquette Intercollegiate, and then are you seeing the field?
Now I am, yeah. It's funny, okay. Like I looked at it, like you said, recently, and I didn't see the field pop up, but now it does.
Yeah, and again, folks, we hate to sound like kids in a candy store, but Gary and I really get into this college golf stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm clicking on here trying to see if Bennett Swavely's in the lineup for Minnesota, which might be a lot to ask of a great program like the Gophers for a kid coming in as a freshman. So he's not in the lineup, but we've got a lot of familiar names with Marquette and with the Wisconsin Badgers. And again, you know, a great field. Who wouldn't want to play at Erin Hills to start out the college golf season?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to. I'll be out there on the final day, Rob, 54 hole tournament, and I'll be out there to watch the Badgers and Marquette and all these other teams. I go back a long way with this tournament. I remember when Bryson DeChambeau played in it, Rob. So
really,
it's a cool tournament. Yeah, yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, he finished second or third 1 year, and then he came back, I believe, the next year and won it. I think he played in it twice for Southern Methodist. So. I've seen a lot of good players there, that's for sure. Chase Koepka, Brooks's brother, has played in it. Matt Fitzpatrick, who obviously is on the tour now. So so we've seen some good golf at this at the Marquette Intercollegiate, that's for sure.
Well, and Aaron Healy, to kind of wrap up our Talking Dot Golf, has seen a lot of great golfers on it as well. At the USAM, I mean, I believe DeChambeau, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth were all there. I was looking at the bracket just this week, and again, it never fails to amaze how great the U.S. amateur is when you look back on it. You know, sometimes when it comes around, you don't appreciate the talent that's there, but you really appreciate it once it's gone through. You can say the same thing here for the Marquette Intercollegiate, and really what Steve Bailey's done in terms of getting this tournament the stature it is, and in exposing golf fans in the state of Wisconsin to you know, some guys that you know, we'll see and hear a lot of here over the next 4 years.
Yeah, if the weather's decent, I think we'll see a lot of people out there watching this tournament. I've in the past years, it's drawn pretty well from people who are curious about college golf. It's not just the parents of the players, although a lot of them show up. It's spectators who want to come watch very high level golf. So so we've got that coming up pretty quickly here, Rob. And I think the Badger Invitational might be the week after that, possibly.
It is. Yep.
So yeah, I've got a couple good in-state college tournaments coming up here.
Well, we've got so much to talk about in the month of September. We're off to a great start. Gary, appreciate the time here on Talking Dot Golf.
All right, Rob, thank you.
For Gary D'Amato, I am Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking Dot Golf, sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a proprietary process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class, are you ready for it? Antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Nailed it. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.